previously on Popping Collars.
You know, that people are carrying around these, you know, they're not, it's not always murder, but, you know, they're carrying around these terrible things that are eating them.
It's not always murder, Betsy?
It's not always murder. Liz, it's under the stole. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to go into specifics with you. Okay. But that it's, but they're carrying around.
Wait, are you on season two of Serial?
Stop it. I'm not talking about this. I've signed non-disclosure agreements. I'm sorry.
Welcome to Popping Collars, the podcast that lives at the intersection between religion and pop culture, the show where priests, pastors, ministers, and religious thinkers from around the country weigh in on what people are binge-watching, tweeting about, trolling on message boards, and celebrating on blogs. My name is Greg Knight. I am in Palm Beach, Florida, and I'm your host of this roundtable conversation with our guests, who this week include a couple of Heartlanders, Chris Arnold from Emporia, Kansas. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Greg.
And Liz Easton from Omaha, Nebraska. Hello, Liz.
Hi, Greg. Hi, Chris.
This is episode 17 of Popping Collars, and our topic today is said trolling, mentioned at the top of this intro. And as long as there's been an internet, it seems that there have been people hiding out wherever others are gathered online, waiting to strike with a pointed insult or a general thoughtless abrasive comment or even something more sinister. And over time, as anyone who's ever made the long, painful journey down a YouTube comments thread can tell you, this behavior has only gone from bad to worse. So is it some form of internet policing? Is it an attempt at comedy? Is it just anarchy for anarchy's sake? I don't know if there are clear rules, but I know it sometimes bleeds into our church world. So a quick question to get us started. What experiences have either of you had with internet trolling, and how did you deal with the situation?
I haven't had any direct experience with it in terms of like my own content. And some of that is because I'm not that big of a contributor to the internet. Like I used to blog a lot. I don't really blog anymore. I don't comment on message boards myself, but I do a lot of reading. And I find myself, I think like anyone, pretty seriously divided in my response to the comment section. Everyone says, you know, don't read the comments, don't read the comments. And I try to avoid that, but sometimes there's this like deliciousness of just reading these jerks talking about some sort of topic. And I feel kind of ashamed of that. And I don't contribute to it, but sometimes I do read it, which is sad. And I'm thinking particularly of, like, I read Jezebel a lot. I don't know if you guys go to Jezebel.com. It's kind of a feminist blog, and their comments can get pretty mean. So, I mean, in that world, which is kind of a third and fourth wave feminist content generator, it's more like someone who's quick to point out how the original blog writer was not thinking or writing in accordance with established feminist principles. And that to me happens in the Episcopal Church too. You know, someone will be quick to point out like your whole argument is stupid because you forgot this rubric in the prayer book or because of some theological principle or something. They're quick to diminish anybody else's contribution by attacking just one aspect of it or one element or a tone. You know, sometimes it's not content at all. It's just tone that they're policing.
See, I agree with that because I sort of found that in the world of academia. I likened it to kind of eggshell walking, where I was like, do I have all of my bases covered as I'm going down this thought path where I'm trying to express something that I think, but have I covered every angle that someone could argue back at me? And especially if it was something easy that was kind of overthought.
It makes you less nuanced and also less willing to just ask a genuine question or explore a real curiosity. It takes a lot of the genuineness and even earnestness out of internet dialogue, because you're constantly guarding yourself for that person who's just going to point out one little flaw in your argument.
What about you, Chris? Any firsthand accounts of
trolling? A lot of mine are, you know, there's that rule that Liz cited, the rule about not reading the comments. A lot of my experience comes from Facebook, which when you think about it is almost entirely comments. People post stuff and then all those comments appear under the status. And it's really hard to not read the comments on Facebook. And then not only that, but then people can like comments. So you can get into this sort of second level of shaming and embarrassment and attacking by sort of liking somebody's comment if they say something that you agree with. I try to be a thoughtful and fairly moderate Episcopal priest, so I post a lot of what I hope to be sort of genuine conversation-stimulating questions about, you know, the content of the Christian faith or the content of our bizarre Episcopalian practices or something in the news media, although I almost never do that anymore because I'm tired of the arguments that show up. And very quickly, you know, my hopes to stimulate sincere and deep, thoughtful reflection and discussion and even debate on the topic, it just becomes people throwing these like bumper sticker versions of religion back and forth at each other. And I've just had to take a couple of comments down, sometimes even, you know, entire threads down, just because I'm disappointed at how it's turned out. Then I feel guilty about censoring people, but, you know, I've gotten over that. So
that's the part that drives me crazy. I mean, not to escalate this conversation too quickly, but that drives me crazy about Facebook and other places on the internet where, at least on Facebook, when we're maintaining our own profile, we are, as clergy, for example, are public representatives of the Episcopal Church and of Christianity in this little world of social media. And on my Facebook friends, for example, lots of folks are Episcopalians, but lots and lots are not. So when we argue like that amongst each other and are actually pretty cruel to each other, we're showing the rest of the world what Episcopal clergy are like. And it's shameful. To me, it is completely shameful the way that we talk to each other in front of other people as if that is a healthy theological dialogue, when other people will look at it and just see that it's pathetic and oftentimes irrelevant to their lives.
And I wonder if, like, Facebook is even a medium that lends itself to dialogue or debate, just because it doesn't allow for answers to tough questions, at least in a way that you would want to read.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, part of the challenge for the church in general, and I guess arguably for anyone who wants to have an elevated sort of discussion about the, you know, ethics and spirituality and the life of the mind, is that we have to find a way to redeem all these media. We can't just have the well-reasoned people only be in academic journals. Meanwhile, the masses can take over everything else. It's like we need to have TV that's talking about all these things, and we need to have Twitter that's talking about all these things, or else, you know, we just further carve up creation.
I think there's a user error when it comes to these things. And what I mean by that, I think, is that so back in the good old early 2000s days, the old chat room days,
yeah,
the GeoCities days. You know, I used to think that really what was empowering the trolls of those days was anonymity, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to put your name on anything, and you could say whatever you wanted to. And it was a mask. It was the best mask ever, because no one was going to be able to track you down. But Facebook isn't a mask. Facebook is your profile. It's your name.
Yeah, it is.
And yet you can be just as cruel on Facebook as you can in any other forum where you're anonymous. And it makes me wonder, is there something about just the medium itself that brings out something less generous in our nature?
It's not a technical distinction by any means, but I think there's a qualitative difference between trolling, which very often is anonymous, and seems to happen much more on Twitter these days. And it's like that, you know, I'm plugging This American Life here, but the This American Life episode and podcast, trolling very often, I think, is anonymous and is just intentionally destructive. But then on Facebook, we get flame wars, which I think are slightly different. I don't think people who, you know, get all up in arms on Facebook are intentionally trying to destroy their opponents. I think they're genuinely trying to advocate for some position that they hold dear, but they just don't know how to fight in a gracious way, or they don't know how to discuss things in a gracious way, and it becomes a fight.
Does it have something to do with passion then? Flaming,
yeah,
is something that you're passionate about. Trolling is something that you're apathetic about, but you know that you can get a rise out of someone if you say something that is offensive about something that someone is passionate about.
Yeah, so I think trolling's primary function is to drive the target of the attack completely off the medium entirely. The flame wars are actually, I think the intention of the people who post that stuff is to try to change people's minds. I don't know if they go about it the right way, but all those people who post stuff on my Facebook page or in on anyone else's Facebook page, I think they really are trying to convert people to their way of thinking. They're just kind of doing it in a bullying way.
Your posts are welcoming feedback, yeah, because mine are like, here's a picture of a cornfield.
Yeah.
Here's a pretty church.
Right, but I think I'm falling more on Liz's side, and I think that it has something to do with fear,
mm-hmm,
right? So I am less likely to post something, you know, that I may be passionate about, that I agree with, mm-hmm, that I, the stance that I take on Facebook, because I'm not sure what kind of comments that I'm going to get from it, yeah, right? So it's easier for me to post something that's innocuous, something that's not going to elicit anything except maybe a few likes. And it makes me wonder, like, so then what's the point? Like, what am I giving into if I'm afraid of where these conversations are going to go?
Well, I think that part of it, you know, for those of us who are ministry professionals, is a very real concern for the people that we care for. Like, for me, when I was the priest in a large church, my congregation was large enough that people were on every, you know, conceivable point in the spectrum on any social or political or theological issue, for the most part. So I was always afraid of posting something that could be a distraction to them or could get in the way for them or could offend them, you know. And now, kind of on a diocesan level, that I'm even more aware of that because I don't have the same depth of relationships to kind of redeem the offense.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it, where my fear came from and my concern. And then the less noble side is the part of me that just doesn't want to my feelings to get hurt or doesn't want, you know, to engage in something that could be especially vulnerable in such a public place.
So not to date our show too much, but I'm going to anyway. While we're recording this right now, the hashtag Baltimore Riots exists on Twitter, right? It's the number one trending topic and has been for 2 days now. Just the worst string of sort of racist tweets you've ever seen in your life just run underneath this hashtag where people are looking for information. That can't just be. Now, some of that is legitimately what people are feeling. They're angry and they're venting some sort of racist anger out into the world. Some of it, you know, is someone who doesn't believe what they're writing and yet are writing something in order to instigate more sort of backlash. I don't understand what the point of that is. I just can't even see it. And yet it exists in the world, and I don't know how it's explained.
I think it's absolutely a thrill that some people get for some reason from simply getting under someone else's skin. And if I can sit at home and write a tweet and get, you know, visible confirmation from the responses that I have really pissed off, can I say that in this podcast? 30 or 40 or, you know, 100 people to the point where they're even more outraged, then I have some sort of confirmation of my own power. You know, it's an addictive thing. I think it's pathological. I think it's I think it's quite possibly even demonic.
I think it's definitely sinful. Like when you mentioned that, Chris, the thrill, you know, that people get, that's almost like chemical or hormonal or whatever. That is sort of what makes what I think of like playing, allowing yourself to play with the dark side in that way and get a little payoff from it. I mean, that definitely sounds like sin to me. And, you know, flirting with sinfulness or with evil or however you want to put it in a very real way. And that's tempting for all of us, you know, like I would love to read the screw tape letters for the modern man. You know, what role does the devil play on the internet? Probably, you know, a pretty big one.
And maybe that's the piece that ties all of this media together, is the sense of ego. It's a sense of ownership. It's a sense of self that's put into it, right?
Yeah.
So that what you receive is all about you, and what you put out is all about you, and what you're getting out of it. How many likes you're getting, how many favorites you're getting,
mm-hmm.
how many little stars you're getting. I think in our world, in our church world, and Liz and I talked about this on an earlier episode when we were sort of tying our world to sports a little bit, we do this thing where we really keep score.
Yes.
And we keep score using shorthand like ASA and our endowment.
And in the Episcopal Church, and I'm sure it's not just in our tradition, but it's the one I'm most familiar with, what completely baffles me the most is the blogging and the commenting on blogs and the posting in which each of us is trying to be sort of novel in our solution to what will fit, you know, quote, fix the Episcopal Church or, you know, where we're getting it wrong. And I, you know, here's the thing. None of us knows that answer. None of us knows how to do that. And we're engaging with it online in such a way that is incredibly disrespectful and diminishing to other people who are trying to be faithful too. It drives me crazy because it short circuits any real conversation and any actually kind of humble work. And that work is going on. It's not like that work doesn't exist because of the internet, but it's not reflected on the internet in the way that it could be, I think.
You know, I've seen it happen online in a number of different places where people feel at liberty to speak with rudeness and a lack of charity and complete condemnation of the person they're talking with because they're convinced that they need to because they're speaking on behalf of justice. I think there's about 50 different places in the Bible that say that, you know, it's more important to speak with kindness.
Yeah, I don't do great with church language a lot of times, but in pop culture language, we call keeping it real. Like that's
oh, that's in the Bible.
And I think that's right. Like I see a lot of that, especially with young people. This idea of, well, I'm just saying what I think,
mm-hmm. yeah.
as if that's a justification for being rude. Just because you think that it's true doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be abrasive. You can be mindful and tactful about what you say and still hold on to your truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a close cousin to that, which I also think is just endemic in the Episcopal Church, is the snark. Is the celebration of snark. And this, maybe this is like the newly acquired Midwesterner in me, but nothing irks me like the snarky comment that is meant to diminish another person. And it's like able to simultaneously say, like, I don't really care what you think enough to be thoughtful about it. I just know you're dumb and I'm smart. So I'm going to be, you know, make a little joke at your expense. That irritates me mainly because it doesn't irritate me outside of the church. Like, if we were following tweets about like the Academy Awards or something, that would not irritate me at all. In fact, I would think it was funny. But when it comes to the church world and our faith life, to me, that's just rude, like you said, Greg, but it borders on shameful. But that snarkiness in church life is, I think, destructive, and it keeps a lot of people out.
And I guess it's the pointedness with which we attack each other that I find distressing.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that it's not even comedy. it's just being mean and then laughing about it and saying that it was a joke.
Right. Well, and I think that so much of it is about our culture where we all get to be celebrities. Like, you know, we're all criticizing each other as if we're the only ones who have an expertise in a given topic. And the truth is, we're not experts most of the time, and neither are the people we're arguing with.
And yet, like, that's the piece. So when you reference those blogs about why aren't millennials in church? Why don't young people come to church? Why don't young families come to church? How do you get young families to come to church? Here are the top 10 things that you can do to get young families into your church. Like, all of these articles, these mythical millennials that aren't coming to our churches, what I think that they would be attracted to, come here. We treat each other with respect and kindness, and we are a loving community, right?
Yeah.
And yet, what we show the world is that warring, sort of battling world that you're talking about, Liz. And how inviting is that?
Right. It's
like,
that's not
inviting.
Like, I don't want to, you know, make it seem like I think that we're doing that all the time. I know that we're not.
Right.
And I wouldn't be in the church if I didn't love it so dearly. But yes, I think that you're right. And I'm really curious to see with the millennial generation, of which I'm technically a part, whether it will opt out of social media. I don't know, but I just wonder if people will get so tired of the inauthenticity of it that they'll opt out in favor of more personal and intimate relationships.
I think that every parish, every component of the Episcopal Church would do very well to establish some sort of social media policy. If you've got a parish with a Facebook page or a Twitter feed or a website or anything, or you have staff who participate online, I think it's just a sensible thing to establish some ground rules up front for what sort of behavior you are going to expect. And I think if you've got a Facebook group or page for your parish, your youth group, you should have a list of, you know, what sort of behaviors will not be tolerated. And you need a couple of moderators who are actually going to enforce that, because it's the only way to keep the space safe enough. Because as I see it, these sort of flame wars can emerge at any time from any direction. And, you know, if you don't want that to be kind of part of your parish culture, then you just need to say up front that you're not going to do that here.
Yeah.
Don't be a jerk.
Yeah. Rule number one, there's a lot of jerks in the world.
Don't be one.
Try not to be one.
Exactly. I just don't get why that's so hard.
Where does justice begin? And over what part of the world do you have control? Your tongue? And the rest of it kind of will grow from there. But I certainly don't think I'm going to get everyone else on the internet to start being nice before I start speaking with kindness and moderation.
You can speak the truth to power, and you can fight for justice and not be a jerk. Yeah, like you know what I mean. You can be all those things and still have Jesus in your heart. I really believe that.
I think because it involves mindfulness. Like, I think that's the piece that keeps coming back to me more and more. And it's not necessarily an age thing, although aging helps. Obsessing about internet trolls the way I do, I'm on Twitter more often than I used to be because of the show. And it's easy to think to yourself when you see a comment that's especially cruel. You create an image in your head of who this person is. Like, they're young or they're lonely. Male.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that the reason for that is because you're trying to think of who is the person who would be the least mindful of what they would say or do in the world. And that's kind of the image that pops into your brain. Mm-hmm. Is like a prepubescent male youth is probably the most thoughtless person in the world. I think that's where the world of trolling becomes really a heavy weight for me, because I see these people who feel like they have the world figured out and feel like they know what's right and what's wrong and what's true. And those are the people that do horrible acts of violence for their truth. And I think that it starts in a place like this, where you don't rein in the things that you can rein in, like your tongue, like your thoughts, like your comments, like your kindness, and you just let fly. And that's the root of really doing harm to others.
I was angry at something that somebody had said to me a couple of months ago. And my spiritual director pointed out that there's my perspective, there's my version of what the right way of things is, but there are lots of other perspectives as well, which means that from my perspective, there's only one way for a person to be right, but there's a million ways for people to be wrong, which means that all of us are surrounded by people who are wrong. And either we can come to terms with that and just say, well, maybe I'm not as right as I thought I was, or we can feel like we're surrounded by, you know, invading hordes.
Or dummies.
But the second part of it, my spiritual director brought up, is that one of the side effects of modern life is that everybody feels as though they're fighting for their lives. Even if they're the most powerful people in the world, everyone feels embattled. And so when you bring that to social media, you know, if you see something that you even disagree with a little bit, like you've got that one opportunity to correct that that imbalance in the universe, and people just take it and it just gets reactive. I think it would be a very different Facebook if you were required to wait an hour between reading someone's status and being able to make a comment on it. Or if you were to write a comment, but then you had to wait an hour to submit it.
Right.
I think it would just be a very different world. But we're just reactive people. And what we're reacting to is the thoughts and opinions of other people, which is always a danger for Christians because it distracts us from, you know, the only real relationship that matters at the end of the day is whether or not we know that we're loved by God. And if we spend all of our time worrying about other people, it takes away from that awareness. So, of course, we feel insecure. I was laying on the floor when you were gone, like you were something I could die from. Now my head aches and your friends all think I'm dumb. You said it's just a bit of bad blood. I don't feel great, but it doesn't bother me because I don't know.
So what we can do now is our Go in Pieces segment, where we communicate to people how they can get in touch with us and how we can get in touch with them through our various social media that we've been putting down over the last 25 minutes. So, Chris, how can people get in touch with you? What are you doing? Where are you?
Oh, well, you can get into the best way to get in touch with me is FatherChristopher.org. That's spelled out, FatherChristopher.org. That's my blog. I post sermons there. I post opinions and opportunities for people to flame me, I guess. And from there, you can get to my Twitter account, which is at FR_Christopher. So that's how you can reach me. And then I just want to put in a plug. We're still a little bit away from general convention, but the Society of St. John the Evangelist, the monastic community in Cambridge, Massachusetts, has set up a website where people can submit prayers of various sorts that will be going to the 78th General Convention of the Episcopal Church this summer and will be part of the General Convention's Prayers of the People. And very creatively, that URL is prayersofthepeople.org.
Wow, that's a pretty decent URL.
Yeah,
prayersofthepeople.org.
How did that not get snagged before?
Seriously, it's not prayers_of_the_.
Claiming me right now.
We'll use that as a segue to Liz. Liz, where are you? What are you doing? And how can people get in touch with you?
I'm the canon to the ordinary of the Diocese of Nebraska. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Liz East. I opened up my Instagram to the people. And or you can follow our diocese on Instagram at diocese_of_Nebraska, which is exactly what Greg was just making fun of. Yeah, we're all over the place, all over the state of Nebraska. Just come to Nebraska. You'll find us.
My name is Greg Knight. I'm the director of Children and Youth Ministries at Bethesda by the Sea Episcopal Church in Palm Beach, Florida. You can find us on the web at bbts.org. You can feel free to troll me at that Greg Knight on Twitter. Popping Collars is all over the place. We are on the Twitter. We are on the Facebook. We are on the Instagram. If you have a social media account, you can put Popping Collars in the search engine and you'll find it. Find us on the web, poppingcollarspodcast.com, where you can see all of our shows. And our podcasts are available wherever you get your podcasts to download, probably. So just go to your usual podcast provider and find our show. Also, let's say a big thank you to EpiscopalCafe.com, who features our podcasts each and every time we put out an episode. And we thank them very much, and we hope that you will visit their site. That's Popping Collars for this week. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Liz, for being with us.
Thank you, Greg.
Keep those collars popped. We'll see you next time. We'll be right back.